Hey, Nick.
Hello, Warwick. Hello, listeners.
G'day, tradies in business. Are you ready? Are you strapped in for the funniest thing you've heard all day?
Come on. It could be very funny. It's probably not, but anyway. Where does a snowman get the weather report?
Oh, no. I don't know, Nick.
The Winternet.
G'day, I'm Woz.
And I'm Nick, sometimes Coxie, mostly Nick.
This is the Tradies in Business podcast, and we're here to share a bunch of tips, ideas, tactics that you can put in place to get change happening in your trade business right now.
If you're really lucky, we're going to entertain you with a few mum jokes, and more importantly, a bunch of fantastic guests that will educate you in all things you need to know about trade business, but we do promise to do it with a whole bunch of fun along the way.
I'm a self-confessed idiot, so strap yourself in and enjoy another episode.
Oh, I love how you're actually making the jokes relevant to our guests, Nick.
I'm trying very hard. Sorry.
The new thing for you, and your internet is cracking. If anybody's watching the YouTube version of this, we've got the pixelated version of Coxie. But impressively, our guest is beaming in all the way from the bottom of the earth, literally. Connor Gordon, welcome to the podcast, mate.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you have a handle. What are you, a carpenter in Antarctica, or is that it?
Yeah, spot on.
Okay, so cool. See, I do follow your socials, mate. I'm a creepy stalker.
That has been a little bit quiet recently, actually.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, I think the darkness of winter's sort of, I've lost the motivation a little bit, but
yeah,
it's still there.
All right, give our listeners some context, Connor. Some of our listeners would personally know you because they've hung out with you on Zoom meetings. But can you give us a bit of backstory, mate, so our non-tradiepreneur listeners know who we're talking to?
So I used to run CIG Carpentry and Maintenance in Canberra. Not too long, about 3 years full time, and had the pleasure of dealing with you guys as my business coaches. And in 2023, I cancelled the business, closed it down, and moved to Antarctica for work for a year.
It's a very dramatic way to get away from Warwick and I. I really thought we had a thing going, Connor.
Oh, I needed a really good excuse.
Sorry, Warwick.
Not normally you go to like the Cayman Islands or something, don't you, if you owe a heap of tax because you haven't really left Australia.
No, I still got to pay a good amount of tax.
I feel like I'm just going to get in the way with this terrible internet, so I apologise if I'm talking all over the top of everyone. Connor, it's a very dramatic change that you've made, and I want to understand what maybe intrigued you in the first place enough to start looking into it, and then what was the process of applying to go and work at the bottom of the earth?
Where do I start? I've sort of seen that there's job opportunities down here from back when I was an apprentice, but never sort of thought I had the experience for it. And then it was at the start of 2023, I was actually looking for employees on Seek, and in the process saw that they were advertising for workers to come down here. And something just clicked and I went, I've got the experience and, you know, it's probably now or never. And I applied for the job and stopped looking for employees. And it was sort of almost an instantaneous thing that I just went, that's what I'm doing. That's my new goal and my next challenge. So there's a lot of things that attract me to it. I've always liked the idea of going away to work for a period of time, saving money, coming back and having, you know, then a period of time and a bit of money to spend, whether it's on traveling or, you know, purchasing property or something along those lines, sort of like FIFO, but on a bigger scale. You can earn some decent money down here as well, and you can save a lot because you're away for a year and there's no expenses, really. You know, I sold the business, I closed the business down, sold all the assets. I've got a Spotify and a Netflix subscription, and that's about it. So saving everything I'm earning. And then that allows me to go and travel when I get back. So that's sort of the big attraction for me. There's also a lot of training, a lot of new skills from coming down here. So I spent 3.5 months in Hobart doing, you know, dogging and rigging courses, working at heights, scaffolding. I did 2 weeks at the hospital learning how to assist the doctor with surgeries if we ever need to do that.
Wow.
So I've got 2 weeks worth of training as an anaesthetics nurse now.
Wow.
Search and rescue, like rope access training, just a whole array of things, which is it's like fantastic. I love learning new skills, and getting paid to do it's even better.
Mm.
Amazing.
I imagine it must be a bit of a culture shock to arrive. Do you leave from Hobart to go to Antarctica? Is that where you were stationed before you came across?
Yeah. So when you first get the contract, you've got to move to Hobart to do all the pre-deployment training, which can vary from, you know, a week to several months. And then you go from Hobart to Antarctica.
So what's it like when you first arrive? I can't even begin to imagine just the, even visually, what that must be like.
Yeah, so I'm at Casey Station, so we've got an airfield relatively close by. So I flew in, and you come onto this ice runway, and it's just white. Everything's white. You can't see, you know, there's nothing on the horizon. It's quite a surreal experience. They need really good weather to fly. So if you're flying in, you've always got, you know, beautiful blue sky day. So yeah, it's pretty incredible experience when you first step off the plane. I don't really know how to describe it, to be honest. And then the airfield's about 70 kilometers from the actual research station. So then you're on a big bus driving down for about 3.5-4 hours towards the station. You eventually see the coast and the icebergs and the station, after seeing nothing but white for, you know, 3-4 hours. And it's, yeah, pretty incredible experience.
Is it cold?
Right now it is. I think we're like minus 35 today, including wind chill. Yesterday we got up to about minus 48.
Wow.
So yeah, we're in the winter months at the moment. So it's pretty cold. And summer's not too bad. It's sort of probably average between 0 and -10 during summer, which is pretty manageable. You get used to it very quickly.
Do you really? So I can't even imagine working in that kind of cold climate. It must be so unpredictable for you to be able to work outdoors when it's so incredibly cold. Can you work outdoors in the extreme winter, or do you have to wait until the warmer months?
Most of the work is, like, especially the outdoor work, is planned for the summer periods for that reason. It does get pretty hard working outside during winter. If you're continuously moving, it's usually fine. You've got all the right gear for the weather. But if you're doing something that's a bit stop start, you really notice the cold the second you stop moving and the blood stops flowing. It makes a big difference.
And I imagine there's a big safety aspect to living and working there because of the conditions. I know it's something that a lot of our listeners not struggle with, but it's such a huge impost, safety on site, you know, like we're talking about building sites and construction zones, and thinking about what you're doing down there where, you know, if you don't have your PPE on, you literally die because of exposure and all that sort of stuff. How on earth is that managed by the research station and the people who are responsible? Because it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. There is a lot of upfront training. We've got to do cold injury training and repeat that every 6 months on like these online modules, just constant training, constant reminders. These current months during winter, we've got to make sure that when we're going outside, we've got no skin at all opened, exposed to the environment. So it's just that constant awareness that you're covering up, you're using the right clothes. Very strict rules if we're going off the immediate station and into the field that we've got, no cotton is allowed in the field because it soaks in the moisture and then that can then freeze to you. So it's, you know, merino clothing and, you know, sort of like snowboard ski style outerwear. So yeah, it's all very strict and just lots of repetition about what we're supposed to wear and how to manage it.
Has there been, any moments where you've thought about what you're doing now and what you were doing before with your carpentry business and just like check it in your head. It's like, what the hell am I doing?
I don't know. I sort of feel like I'm meant to be here. I feel like I'm a very good fit for this environment. So I've got no regrets about what I've done. It's very different going from running my own business to working for the government. Got a lot less control over things, which when I first came down as, you know, was definitely a change in headspace, but I've gotten used to it and made it work for me. So, yeah.
Connor, on the headspace thing, I can imagine that that massive shift that you've made could potentially create some great times and some not so great times. And the fact that you're living and working in the one space, you can, it's not like you can jet off for a holiday or you can't just drive down a country road and get away for a pub lunch or something. How do you manage your headspace living and working in the environment that you are?
Yeah, it can be quite tough living and working with the same people. I think your workmates here can really make or break your experience, and we're lucky to have an awesome group of people. Everyone gets along for the most part really well, which is fantastic. When you do have those down times, I think it's really important to be able to have a sort of space you can go to if you need your own time. And, you know, we've all got our own rooms, which if we didn't, I think that would make things 10 times harder. So you've got a space you can go to and just chill, listen to some music, whatever it is that, you know, calms you down.
Yep.
We've got access to psychologists or psychiatrists back in Kingston, the headquarters for the Antarctic Division. Mm-hmm. We've got access to them if we need to talk to someone. We've got a doctor on station that we can talk to as well. So there's sort of lots of options in that regard.
And what do you do socially? Is there downtime? And in that downtime, do you get to socialize or do something for fun, or is it all work?
But during the summer, it's a bit more go, because that's when all the projects are on. You've got the better weather. There's a lot more people on station. It's quite busy, relatively speaking. And then in the winter, things tend to calm down a bit. It's more normal work hours. We've got a lot more time in a sense because we're working normal hours, but there's no commute times. We don't have to cook for ourselves. Mm. We've got a chef that prepares a couple meals a day. And so you've got a lot of time if you want to do a side hustle or study something. There's a lot of time for that. We've got a cinema. We've got a bar with the pool table and dartboard, table tennis, lots of board games that get played. There's almost every night there's a group out playing a board game, communal lounge areas, a lot of people getting into photography. There's you know, a number of things we can do. One of the fantastic benefits coming down here is that we get reimbursed up to, I think it's like $2,000 or something for doing study, so you can sort of pick an online course to do and do that while we're here, and we get reimbursed for it. So it's sort of a bit of, I guess, a way for us to keep ourselves busy but also upskill, and so that's a pretty cool benefit. So I think just about everyone's studying something as well. That's great.
What about the kind of work that you're doing, Connor? What sort of projects are you working on, and how does it differ from when you were doing it for yourself?
Sort of quite a range of things. We, as carpenters down here, we're kind of like the jack of all trades. Mm. So there might be tiling, plastering, painting, you know, what have you to do. There's a lot of like repairing doors and door seals and making sure the buildings are, you know, properly sealed up so no wind and snow gets through. Mm-hmm. Tiniest little gap. And if there's a blizzard, it just absolutely fills up behind the door, and to a point where you might not be able to actually open the door. So that's quite an important aspect. This year in particular, the plumbers have a lot of work on, and, you know, borderline maybe not enough people to do it, whereas the carpenters have been a little bit more quiet. So I've actually been helping the plumbers a lot this year. So almost like a bit of a trades assistant there, but, you know, combined with the carpentry jobs as well. It's lots of random small jobs, replacing expired fire extinguishers and just keeping the place ticking over.
And how does it differ then, Connor? Because I'm at, well, again, I keep using the word imagine because that's all I can do. I have no basis for what it is that you're doing down there. Do you have to wear when you're working outside, of course, you'd have gloves and things on. That would make it really challenging compared to the way you would work normally. Although you did come from Canberra, so it's also cold.
Yeah. Canberra was a bit of a struggle in winter as well. And I think that when I had my psych interview before coming down, the lady asked if I, you know, had anything I was concerned about. And I said, working with gloves on, like, it's a pain in the ass.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I knew that coming down, it's as a carpenter, you want to do little fiddly things and you just can't do it with gloves on. So that's, you know, obviously the environment's one of the biggest challenges down here. And you've got to plan for that. If you are doing a job outside, you might need to use those chemical hand warmers, have a second set of gloves that you, you know, maybe sit them near a heater and swap your gloves out every, you know, 10 minutes even. Hot drinks ready to go if you're working outside. It's you really do need to put a bit of thought into how you manage the cold, pretty much. Because, yeah, it can hit you pretty quick.
Does it slow you down then because you're having to think about some of those external ways to keep warm?
Yeah, a 5-minute job can take all day here.
Wow.
Did you work for the government, Connor? That's how it rolls, isn't it?
Yeah.
Standard. Couldn't resist that one.
But sometimes, you know, you've got to shovel snow out of a doorway to get something, or the vehicles are blizzed in and surrounded by snow. So you've got to shovel a vehicle out to then get the vehicle to where you need to go. And, you know, any number of things can add up to just really drag out a job. And the work's, yeah, it's a much more commercial style of work. It's kind of like being on a mine site. Mine site is probably the closest thing to what we'd have in Australia. Whereas in Canberra, I was doing residential renovation type work. So that's quite a change as well. Instead of working on nice entry doors, I'm working on big vehicle workshop roller doors, panel lift doors, and that sort of thing. So there's a few new things for me to learn there.
Yeah. These complexities with the weather are really abnormal for somebody that grew up in Australia. And yet there are so many countries in the world where this is almost normal, perhaps not completely to this extreme, but we have some clients that now I can't quite remember where they came from, Warwick, but it was in winter they couldn't work because they were just totally snowed in.
Norway,
thank you. And so it was really interesting just learning about how your trade is still applicable. It doesn't matter where you go, we need carpenters or plumbers or electricians, and there are different pressures that mean that we can't work at certain times of the year or through certain situations. There's plenty in Australia as well. You know, if we get a cyclone or inclement weather, they can keep us off site for a really long time. But it's a different pressure than it is with this cold extreme that you're experiencing. Was that hard for you to get your head around when you first arrived, or because you were coming into that cold space, you were quite prepared?
Yeah, I think they prepare us pretty well. Like I said earlier, I was in Hobart for 3.5 months and you're sort of constantly exposed to these discussions, and people have been down before and recounting their experiences and letting you know what to expect, as well as the official training. And so you are prepared pretty well. It's a bit weird when you get down here, but you get used to it very quickly, I think. I was only down about 2 or 3 days before we had our first blizzard, and so I just got sort of thrown straight into the deep end. And so I think that was good. You got down, you experienced what it can be like, and you're like, okay, well, the winds can pick up in no time. You know, 20 minutes it can go from being still to 80 kilometers an hour. So you basically just have to get into this headspace of never leaving anything untied outside. If you're ever doing any work outside, you've got to leave it as if, you know, there's going to be a blizzard that night. You get your head around it pretty quick.
We've sort of joked a little bit about the fact you work for the government, and you've had a business before, and you're working very closely with, well, I don't know how many people are there. I imagine it's quite a few in the station. But you're with them for a long time and you're kind of stuck together. All that interpersonal stuff, is there anything proactively being done about those interpersonal relationships and, you know, workplace culture and some of the problems, I guess, our listeners have? It'd just be interesting to see what happens in the the extreme environment and that kind of almost a lockdown scenario. You know, if I think about COVID from a few years back, you guys are in permanent lockdown, essentially. You can't escape each other. Yeah. How's that managed?
Yeah, pretty much. over summer, it's probably in some ways harder because there's more people. You've got station population's about 120 for the most part. Mm. And so there's more people, but also more chance to get away from the people you're having issues with.
Yeah.
Mm. And then in winter, we've got 31 people here over winter. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot harder to kind of get away from those people. But like I said, we've got a good group, so we haven't really experienced any big issues.
Mm.
But I think the key is just to be proactive. As soon as something does start to arise, it's get on top of it. Not like a mediation, but like talk it out. Mm-hmm. What are the frustrations? How can we work around it? And the earlier you get onto it, the better.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I imagine it would be easy to just assume everything's okay. And for nobody to really take any active role in ensuring that everyone's traveling along all right. Is there, like, other than the programs, you know, the movie theater and all that sort of stuff, is there a focus on well-being? Because I imagine it would be really important. I know I'm kind of stuck on this, but I think it's a big issue that a lot of business owners have, is their sort of emotional management and energy management. And I always find these sorts of scenarios where you are, and I read a lot of books about, sort of alpine adventurers and mountaineers and that sort of stuff. And it's a really big part of getting through those missions is sort of the mindset management. I just wonder if the government bothers doing anything about that other than say, you know, here's a movie theater and a pool table, knock yourselves out.
I don't know specifically what official stuff they have in place, but they are definitely like sort of working on that aspect. They had a report come out a few years ago which didn't show it in the most positive light. So they're doing a lot of work in the background to improve that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But like our station leader here is really good. This is his third winter down here at Casey. And there's a lot of effort that goes into keeping us entertained and busy. So I think we would potentially start to have issues and people getting, you know, missing home or whatever it may be if we were kind of just left to our own devices when we're not working.
Yep.
But we've got lots of activities. We have a weekly sort of talk on Tuesdays. Someone gets up and talks about, you know, science or, you know, their skydiving adventures or, you know, whatever it may be, something interesting to them. And that gets a really good turnout. We have probably every second week we have some sort of party for whether it's a birthday or someone's just said, hey, I want to, you know, do this, have a Guitar Hero tournament or something. So there's always something happening that keeps people engaged, and there's no, you know, no one has to go to it, but there's usually a very good turnout. And so there's always something just to keep us ticking along, thinking about what's happening, you know, the following week or keeping us engaged, I think is pretty key. I think that's a big part of it. And that comes into the study that I was talking about before, how they reimburse us for the study. It's another thing that just keeps us engaged, keep us not thinking about, oh, it's 5 months till we get home, it's 4 months till we get home, because I think we'd all slowly go insane if that's all we're thinking about.
Totally. Connie, are you there for the entire 12 months or do you have the opportunity to even pop back to Hobart during that time?
Over the summer, there's flights coming and going from Casey, so it's not uncommon for people to pop home if there's a medical reason or something rather serious.
Yep.
And that did happen this summer. One or two people sort of had to pop back home for stuff, and then they were able to return before winter. But over winter, there's nothing. There's no flights. There's no ship. It's about 7 or 8 months. We're just here. That's it. No coming or going.
Oh, that messes with my head on all kinds of levels, like the food. And there's just so much in my head, so many questions I have. But I want to know, probably first and foremost, Connor, what do you miss about home?
Fresh food is a good one.
You brought it up, Nick. Nice one. Yeah. He was just getting over that, and he just talked about, you know, a juicy steak or something.
It's been all right recently. We've got a hydroponics set up here, so we've got some leafy veg that's come out of that quite recently, which has been a real treat. I think you learn to really appreciate the little things down here. But I think fresh food is a big thing that a lot of people miss. And although we get really good food from our chef, we miss just being able to go out to a restaurant or cook our own thing and have exactly what we feel like on that given day.
I won't tell you about the kingfish sashimi I had last night then, mate. It was terrible.
I'm sure there's plenty of sashimi in Antarctica. You're going to get it anyway. That's the best place to get it.
Catch it. It's all frozen stiff.
A bit of sea ice in the bay we'd have to get through for that.
Connor, the animals there are so different than what we see at home for all of us. What have you encountered so far?
Lots of Adelie penguins. There's a couple of colonies nearby, one within walking distance. And so sometimes they'll be walking through station and we've got to sort of stop what we're doing and get a few photos and let them do their thing. But they're amazing. I could watch them all day. We get seals, got Weddell seals and leopard seals, are the main two. And a couple of birds, snow petrels and skuas are the main two birds we get, and storm petrels. So there's not a lot of variety. That's about it. And elephant seals as well, actually. They're pretty interesting creatures to watch. So very limited, but very, you know, quite amazing wildlife. And, the penguins, you can't get enough of them. They're very cute but weird creatures. They always look confused and walking around in circles, don't know where they're going, but they're on a mission.
They sound like employees, mate. Confused, walking around in circles. Trying to look busy.
First year apprentices.
Definitely.
Connor, would you do it again?
Come back to Antarctica?
Yeah. Would you do it all again?
Yeah, I'm planning to.
Wow.
Treat it like FIFO, year on, year off for a few years and see where I go from there.
That's fantastic. Nice, mate. Who would have thought that this would have ended up? I could never have picked this in a pink fit.
Yeah, well, it sort of came out of the blue. But, like I said, once I kind of saw it, something clicked and I just went, that's me.
Yeah.
And sort of, I don't know, it just works really well for me. It fits everything I want to do. Like I said, I like learning new skills. I'm a snowboarder as well, so I'm quite comfortable in the cold environments and almost prefer it. And you know, save a lot of money. I've been a pretty nomadic person. Since 21, I've lived in Christchurch, Queenstown, Wollongong, Canberra, Perth. So I'm sort of quite used to moving around. So it just works really well for me. I can come down, work, save some money and go somewhere new for a year.
Fantastic. What a lifestyle.
Perfect, mate. I'm going to ask you the question that I often ask on the show, and I'm fascinated to know what your answer might be, Connor. If you had 1,000 trade business owners in a room, what would be one piece of advice you'd like to leave them with?
It's a tough one.
Other than sell up and move to Antarctica.
Follow your passion, I guess, you know. Do what makes you happy. I think a big thing that resonates with me is the Japanese word ikigai, which is essentially if your ikigai is something that makes you happy, you enjoy doing and passionate about, something you can earn money from, something that benefits the community. And there's another one which I've slipped my mind, what you're good at. So if you're good at something, you enjoy it, you can make money from it, and it benefits the community, that's your ikigai. And I think I've found that for me, and so I've just dived in head first. And I think if you can find that, it's a pretty amazing thing. So
love it, mate.
Go for it.
I must admit, I've found this thoroughly entertaining. I have so many more questions, Connor. I think I'm going to send you an email, and you can do it in long form when you've got time. There's a project for you to work on. What a fascinating choice that you have made to spend this time in your life doing something so amazing that does benefit us all. Thank you. Mm. Hope you continue to enjoy. Please be safe.
Where are your PPE, mate?
Yeah, yeah. Please keep your PPE. It's good to see you. You look really well and healthy. It clearly suits you down there. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate it, mate. All the way from Antarctica. Take care, and we'll see you when you're back on the mainland, perhaps. Tell us what the comparison's like.
Yeah, start up another business, maybe.
Nice, mate. Oh, now, one last thing. If people want to go and check you out, obviously you've got a social channel. You said it's been a bit quiet lately. Can't imagine why. What's the best place for people to find you, Connor?
Yeah, Carpenter in Antarctica on Instagram. And, you know, in the near future, I'll be popping up some YouTube videos as well. So, cool. Yeah. Put some notifications up on Insta if that happens.
Awesome, mate. Love seeing your some of your footage from when you got down there and heading out on your little adventures off base. So looks amazing, yeah. Mate. And
great fun.
Go check Connor out, gang. Have a think about your ikigai. Give it some thought. Thanks for being on the show, Connor.
Thanks for having me.
Larue.